We welcome Rabbi Rami Shapiro as our speaker today. Rabbi Rami was ordained as a Reform Rabbi in 1981, and he earned a doctorate in religious studies in 1985. You can listen to his podcast, Essential Conversations, at spiritualityandhealth.com. Many of you read his column called Roadside Assistance for the Spiritual Traveler that he writes for Spirituality and Health magazine. Rabbi Rami has written more than 30 books. Recent titles include Accidental Grace and Perennial Wisdom for the Spiritually Independent. Today, Rabbi Rami will speak on the topic, Krishnamurti, Byron Katie, and the Practice of Neti Neti. Let's welcome Rabbi Rami.
Wow, congratulations with that. That was pretty good. Good morning.
Good morning.
So after the story for all ages, do you still feel at home? Only here. Okay, so I want to talk to you about these two people and this practice. We won't do all of it in the next 15, 20 minutes. It's too much to do. So in the talk back session is when we're going to explore Byron Katie, and I have handouts about how to do what she suggests we do in order to liberate ourselves from stories that we carry that don't serve us very well. And I want to put the whole thing in the context of Passover, which starts, I think, Friday night. I think, because you live in Murfreesboro long enough and all I know are Christian holidays anymore. I can't remember anything. But I think it starts this Friday night. Friday, am I right?
Friday night.
Friday night, yeah. Okay, good. I still have some semblance of my Jewishness left. So, starts Friday night. Passover is the holiday of liberation. And now, the story itself, which we're not going into, is simply historical fiction. There's absolutely no evidence that Jews were ever enslaved in Egypt and they ever escaped from Egypt. And even if that were true, then it would just simply be a historical memory that we would retell over and over again and really have no value in the present. But the story is not true. But the reason it survives and is told year after year, part of the reason anyway, is because we are always enslaved somewhere. And Passover is a week for getting out of slavery, getting out of bondage. The word for Egypt in Hebrew is Mitzrayim, and it's a pun. So even when they wrote the story, they knew they weren't really talking about a geopolitical place. The word Mitzrayim means from the narrow places. You're trying to get out from the narrow places. And the way you get stuck in the narrow places is by feeding on what's called chumitz, which is leavened product. And back then, leaven was made from sourdough. So chumitz represents all the sourness that we feed ourselves and one another that cause us to either, you know, to bloat, right, with sourness to make even normal life too narrow. So the real work of Passover is to identify where the sourness is coming in, where you're bringing it into your life, where you're bringing it into other lives, and stop doing it. And every time you don't eat a leavened product on Passover week, you're supposed to remember and say, oh yeah, so where's the sourness coming from? I'm deliberately avoiding leaven to remind myself about avoiding sourness, so where is it and what do I have to do? So that's the general overview. But I want to talk about this idea of freeing ourselves from souring ideas in the context of the practice of Neti Neti and these two modern 20th century, and Byron Katie still alive, so 21st century spiritual teachers. So let me start with Krishnamurti. I have mentioned him before, but I don't think we ever actually read or heard, I'm going to read it to you, his liberating speech, the speech that made him who he is. So very quickly, just some background if you're new to him. He was born in the end of the 19th century, so late 1800s, and was, along with his brother, just another one of millions and millions of poor Indians living in India. But he was discovered in the early 20th century by Annie Besant. Annie Besant was the leader of the Theosophical Society, which at that time was this huge global movement that tried to do what the flags, we've got a bent flag of the Sufis there, what the flags tried to do, take the wisdom of every tradition in the world and blend it into a new kind of religion, focused on philosophy more than faith, and meditation more than any other kind of practice, and really introduce the world to a global religion. That's what they had in mind. And they thought that the pinnacle of this would happen when the world teacher came on the scene. And that's who they were looking for. And they saw this boy, Krishnamurti, and something in I don't know, Annie Besant's imagination, saw him as someone who would grow into the world teacher. They went to his father, and they said, we would like to hire you, the dad, to work for us if you will give us your kids to train in the best of Western education. So the dad agrees. It's more complicated than I'm making it, but the dad agrees. The two boys are taken, Krishnamurti and his brother, taken to England. They're sent through the best private schools. They go to Oxford to do all this stuff. His brother is a brilliant scholar. Krishnamurti is interested in girls, golf, and cars. His brother dies very young, but Krishnamurti is still being trained to be the world teacher. And in 1929, after many, many years of training, he's supposed to reveal himself as this world teacher. So it's August 3rd in Omen, Holland. 3,000 people come from around the world to hear the announcement. And he comes up on the stage, and this is what he says. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, it's long, but this is what he says. You may remember the story of how the devil and a friend of his were walking down the street when they saw ahead of them a man stoop down and pick something up from the ground. The man looked at it and then put it away in his pocket. The friend said to the devil, what did the man pick up? And the devil said, the truth. And the devil's friend said, that must be very bad business for you then. And the devil said, oh, not at all. I'm going to help him organize it. I maintain, now remember, this is supposed to be the guy who's going to head this worldwide thing, and they made a special organization that's already thousands, tens of thousands of members. I maintain that truth is a pathless land, and you cannot approach it by any path whatsoever, by any religion, by any sect. This is my point of view, and I adhere to it absolutely and unconditionally. Truth, being limitless, unconditioned, unapproachable by any path whatsoever, cannot be organized, nor should any organization be formed to lead or coerce people along any particular path. So then he goes on and says, I dissolve this organization. I'm on the road, and he spends the rest of his life simply being what you might call just a freelance philosopher. And he has a very strict philosophy, and that is, it's your attachment to isms and ideologies and philosophies and religion that keep you from actually knowing the truth. Now, he talks about two kinds of truth or facts. One is the practical thing. You have to know your name. You have to know your social security number. You have to know where you live, right? He's not trying to get us to forget any of those things. What he wants to free us from is all the ideas that we have that make meaning out of life but are simply imagined. We make them up. So that's what he wants to get rid of. Let me just pick up. I am not concerned whether you pay attention to what I say or not. I'm not talking about the dissolution. He's the boss. He destroyed it. But after that, he's going to go on the road and teach. I'm not concerned whether you pay attention to me or not. I want to do a certain thing in the world, and I'm going to do it with unwavering concentration. I'm concerning myself with only one essential thing: to set people free. I desire to free people from all cages, all fears, and not to found religions, sects, or to establish new theories and new philosophies. Then you will naturally ask me why I go all around the world talking. I'll tell you for the reason I do this. Not because I desire a following, not because I desire a special group of special disciples. All I care about is setting people free. I once went to the Krishnamurti Center in California, and knowing, I mean, I've been reading this guy's stuff for decades, knowing that he doesn't want followers, and he was already deceased, he doesn't want to be a guru, and I went in and like an idiot, I said, you know, can I buy a poster of you guys? And they said, have you ever read him? You know, we don't do that. He's not a guru kind of character. The very end of his speech, he says, well, actually, I already said this to you. My only concern is to set people absolutely unconditionally free. And to do that, you have to question everything that you think you know. And again, it's not the practical knowing, where's my house and where do I work? It's not, but it's this, what he calls the psycho-spiritual knowing, the psychological knowing, all the things that you tell yourself ought to be true or should be true about you, about other people. Those are things you should drop, because those are things you really are just, you're just inventing them. And then on a bigger scale, any of the name brand religions, he wants them all gone. He says these things simply divide us from one another, and worse, divide us from ourselves. Anyone watching the Search for God show on National Geographic television station? Yeah, it's Morgan Freeman is doing the narration. So I don't know if you like the show, you don't like the show. I'm very disappointed in the show. All the more so having learned that Rupert Murdoch just bought National Geographic. And which saddened, I should have lit a candle. Which saddens me for so many reasons. I mean, this is a great institution. I was just there in D.C. a few weeks ago. It's still a great institution. They've got this thing they're working on where they're photographing every species that we know of. They're trying to save, to buy, actually, in a sense, huge tracts of ocean and making it off limits to people so that it'll just thrive, you know, as a national or global treasure. They're doing all these things. Rupert Murdoch is not interested in any of that. And I'm worried that Morgan Freeman's show, because when I watched it, and I tape it, I watched it last night, and the second one, and it sounds like, literally sounds like, from the music and everything else, like the History Channel nonsense, when they you know, they do their religious things. And it's really disappointing. He's got these great topics that he just does very little justice to, I think. But what he gives you, in the end, is not what Krishnamurti, and I've only seen two of the six, but I think this is the way it's going. He's not giving us the liberation of Krishnamurti. He's giving us the muddle of saying, well, everybody has this kind of stuff, so there it is. So last night, it was all about the apocalypse. Every religion, except Buddhism, has an end times. Now, Hindu end times simply flips to the beginning times again, so it just keeps going. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, we have an end time where things actually end once and for all. Hinduism, they end once again, and it just keeps going. And Buddhism, he interviewed the Karmapa, who's like, the Dalai Lama is here, the Karmapa is like here. And I actually met with the Karmapa last year, and Dalai Lama, Karmapa, me. So, but he met with him, and the Karmapa said, no, we don't have this absolute end times kind of thing. We think, you know, everything is changing moment to moment, so thinking there's a real end to anything makes no sense. But he could have then taught us something, Morgan Freeman, taught us something about this. Why do we think this way? What do we do with these thoughts? Why are the end time scenarios of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all about war? Why is it always so violent? And Hinduism too, but it's not just humans fighting, the whole planet, just the whole universe just breaks apart. But it's not a war. Why is the West so obsessed with war and winning? Because in Hinduism, nobody wins, nobody loses. Or you could say everybody loses, but then everybody wins. We start again. But in Judaism, Christianity, Islam, there's a winner, namely the Jews, the Christians, or the Muslims, right? Depending which group you're talking to. Why is it like? And he doesn't deal with any of those questions. Krishnamurti doesn't actually deal with them as a scholar might. He simply says these are the crazy thoughts that people have because we refuse to see the reality that there's really no such thing as Jews and Christians and Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus. These are labels we invent and then impose on one another or upon ourselves to separate ourselves from one another, to set ourselves in competition and conflict with one another over who's right, if not who has a right to live, and then create a world based on these, you know, fundamentally delusional differences. I don't know if you've ever read Albert Einstein's letter to Robert Marcus.
Oh, no, I never heard about it.
So I don't know who Robert Marcus was, but Robert Marcus wrote to Einstein because his son had died, Marcus's son had died, and he just wrote to Einstein to get some comfort. I mean, if I was going to look for solace, I wouldn't be going to Albert Einstein. I'd be afraid he'd send me some equation I couldn't understand. But anyway, Einstein wrote this very short one paragraph thing. I can't quote it exactly, but it was this beautiful little note. And in it, he says that, nothing, he doesn't tell the guy not to grieve, but he says, your son, when alive, but even now, human beings are part of this incredible universe of, you know, birthing and dying. It's all part of the natural pattern of things. And then he talks about what he calls the optical delusion of separation, where people feel cut off from nature, and then they feel cut off from one another, and eventually they feel alienated even from themselves. This is the problem that Krishnamurti tries to solve. Religion and philosophies and all these different things actually feed the problem by dividing us up into finer and finer little groups. I mean, there are thousands of Protestant denominations, and it's just madness. And they really, I was somewhere a couple of days ago trying to get someone to explain to me the difference between Presbyterians and Methodists. And there is a difference. I just don't know what it is. And Presbyterians couldn't tell me, and Methodists couldn't tell me. They just know that they would never go to each other's churches because there's nothing wrong there. So Krishnamurti says we've got to free ourselves from this division making. So how do you do it? Neti neti is a practice. It's N-E-T-I hyphen N-E-T-I. It means literally not this, not this. It's Sanskrit, it's Hindu idea. And the idea behind neti neti is every time you get an idea, and again, not the idea, where did I put my shoes, but the idea, oh, if we only believe this, everything would be great. Now I'm going to make people believe my way. Every time you get an idea about what ought to be or what should be, you know, within the context of religion or philosophy, the practice of neti neti is to say to yourself, no, that's not it. Is to, every time you get a thought, you go, no, not that thought, not that thought, not that thought. Until you realize that every thought that's popping up is always, you might say, contaminated by Einstein's optical delusion. It's always about division. And that if we could simply, as we think the thought, recognize that we don't have to think the thought, or the thought itself isn't true, that we would drop it. It's not that your mind wouldn't continue to think. Someone wrote me for the magazine, it's in, I think it's in the current issue, or maybe it's the next issue, I'm not sure, but someone wrote me in the magazine saying, I've been meditating and I can't get my mind to stop thinking. What am I doing wrong? What do I do to get my mind to stop thinking? My response was, minds think. To get your mind, I mean, first of all, who's going to get your mind to stop thinking? Just, it's your mind. So you're just going to start thinking about not thinking and drive yourself crazy because you're still thinking, even if you're thinking about not thinking. So that's ridiculous. Minds think. Minds come up with ideas. Minds are always thinking and feeling and spouting all kinds of things. Neti neti is not about getting your mind to stop doing that. It's sort of stepping into a larger, what the neti neti people and Krishnamurti call, sort of an observer stance, where you see your mind doing all this stuff, and but you don't attach to what it's doing. Is that, you follow that idea? You just step back from it, you don't attach it. Now, in Talkback Hour, I'm going to introduce Byron Katie, and Byron Katie says you can do more than that. You can actually enter into the idea and blow it up from the inside. Neti Neti Krishnamurti are saying, just observe the madness of Einstein's optical delusion and the ideas that it produces that divide us more and more. You can step back, and that's one way to become free, and that's what we're talking about, Passover liberation, right? That's one way to become free. And then Byron Katie says, but there's another way. If you can't step back, you can step deeply in and just explode the idea and realize that it's not true from the inside. So whether you're coming from the outside or you're coming from the inside, the liberation we're talking about is freedom from all of this. Now, I want to suggest that you use are primed for neti neti, right? That the whole idea, as it's evolved, today, in liberal UU fellowships like this one, so UU groups like this one are primed to be able to challenge, not just from the inside, which we'll get to, but to be the witness, to step back and say, no, that's just another divisive creation of another human mind. And just say, it's not that. Whatever it is, it with a capital I, the universe, meaning, purpose, if there is such a thing, whatever reality is with a capital R, it can't be something that you and I make up in our heads. So can we simply say neti neti to all of it? One thing at a time, it comes up. I think UUs are really, because it's non-creedal, because we read about butts. We have the intellectual capacity and this might sound a little odd, but I'm gonna try to keep this in my time slot here. We have the intellectual capacity, but also the sense of humor necessary to live without the isms and ideologies. Because it requires a lot of humor to go, oh, it's not that one, it's not that one. Otherwise, you get anxious, and then you just grab onto it and hold it all the more tightly. But if you realize it's simply your mind spinning another idea, and you can step back and say, that's not what it claims to be. That's just another idea. It's not reality. It's not this. It's not that. There is a liberation that comes, and what Krishnamurti says, and what Byron Katie says, and what a lot of people who are in this aspect of spiritual practice say, when you aren't clinging to all these ideas, the only thing left to do is to embrace one another in compassion and love. It's the result of liberation is compassion. The result of clinging to our brand named ideas and ideologies is fear and ultimately competition, if not actual violence. So I'm going to end with that and invite those, steal your phone, that's not what I meant to do, and invite those who can say and want to come back and talk about how to do this in a practical, another way, very practical way. We'll get into Byron Katie's work, and I'll give you the handouts on how to do that. So thank you.